the House Commerce Committee to order on May 6th, 2020. Welcome, everybody. We will ask Simon to take the roll of the members that are here.
Representative Halverson.
Here.
Representative Stevenson.
Nice to chat. Feel free to give me a comment.
We've got somebody who needs to mute. There you go.
I muted everybody, so when we go through the roll, people will have to unmute themselves one at a time. We just have a lot of testifiers for particularly the first bill, and so wanting to get them all lined up, that's probably what we heard. So just a reminder for even members of the public, too, please watch out in the background. So sorry, Simon.
That's okay. So Representative Halverson is here. Representative Stevenson?
Here.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Present.
Representative Carlson?
Present.
Representative Davids?
Present.
Present.
Representative Dean?
Here.
Present.
Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Garofalo? Representative Haley?
Present.
Representative Howard?
Present.
Representative Cotizza-Watoon? Representative Crenshaw? Representative Lesh?
Present.
Representative Lislegard? Representative Mahoney? Representative O'Neill? Representative Richardson?
Here.
Representative Swazinski? Representative Tabke?
Here.
Representative Tice?
Here.
All right, so it looks like everyone is here except for Representative Garofalo, Crenshaw, Lislegard, and O'Neill, if I'm correct.
O'Neill is here now.
Great, thank you. Representative O'Neill is present.
Thank you, Simon, and members. The next item on the agenda is the approval of minutes from May 1st, 2020. I will ask for a motion to adopt the minutes from May 1st.
I move the adoption of the minutes from May 1st.
Representative Stevenson moves adoption of the minutes of May 1st, 2020. Is there any discussion to that motion? Hearing no discussion, we will vote by voice vote. So Travis can unmute everybody. Keep your background noise to a minimum. All those in favor of adoption of the minutes from May 1st, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and we have adopted our minutes. We'll go back to mute. And first item on our agenda for bills will be 4597, Representative Tabke. Representative Tabke, you can move your bill and proceed with an explanation of your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 4597 to State Government Finance Committee, please.
Representative Tabke moves House File 4597 be referred to State Government Finance. And do you have an amendment to take up as well?
Yes, ma'am. We have amendment A20-0768 as an author's amendment.
Okay. Would you like to move that and we can put it in the shape you like?
Yes, I'd like to move amendment A20-0768.
Representative Tabke moves the A20-0768 amendment. Any discussion to the motion? Hearing no discussion, we will vote by voice vote on adopting the author's amendment. Please unmute and keep your background noise to a minimum. Yes. All those in favor, please aye. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any okay. opposed? Say aye. No. The motion prevails. And also now the bill is before us. The bill is before us amended in the shape that the author wishes, and Representative Tabke can explain his bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This is a bill for the Minnesota Racing Commission that's COVID-related issues that need to be handled as we are going into this summer, this summer's racing season. All the provisions that we're discussing today in this bill are things that are temporary in nature. We're just doing it during the COVID, so there's no long-term gambling changes that are being made. This is just goes through December 31st of 2021 is where we're headed with this, and hope everyone agrees. And so there are three main things that this bill does. And before we get into those, it's important for all members to understand that Canterbury Park and Running Aces this summer, they have to have races per statute. So they're required by Minnesota statute to have at least 50 days of races this summer, whether there's a crowd there or not due to COVID-related issues that we've got going on. And so we put this bill together and trying to address as many of the COVID-related issues as we can. One of the things that we tried to have included in this bill, as was in the original bill, was the ability to have advanced daily wagering done. So off-track betting, basically. In the state of Minnesota, you cannot bet. Minnesotans cannot bet on Minnesota races. They can bet on races outside of Minnesota, but not on races here in our state. And so we were trying to have that piece on a temporary basis be able to happen in Minnesota, but we could not come to agreement from all the important parties that were necessary to get that done. And so we stepped back on that issue, but we kept very much important things that are done for Canterbury Park and for Running Aces, the two main racing establishments in the state of Minnesota. So the three things that this bill does is it allows purse money to be used on things for capital expenditures and operations. And again, this is just a temporary basis for the next until December 31st of 2021. It also changes the Minnesota Racing Commission gets on all bets that are done through the ADW wagering system. The Minnesota Racing Commission gets 1% of those bets in order to fund operations. And so we are trying to reduce fees and expenses on the racetracks as much as possible. And we have bumped that from 1% to 2%, which we think will bring between $500,000 and $750,000 more into the Minnesota Racing Commission for them to use for this summer and then the next summer. And then the third thing that it does is it gives flexibility to the Minnesota Racing Commission to, under extraordinary circumstances, have races, less race days throughout the year than 50. So those are the three main things that the bill does, Madam Chair, and we have some testifiers to talk about things. And it is a little out of order from what was posted earlier, but I would appreciate if Steve May, the racing commissioner, could begin first and just talk about why this is important for the racing commission.
Thank you, Representative Tabke. Mr. May, are you on the line?
Okay. Good afternoon. This is Steve May, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Racing Commission. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate your time today. Really don't necessarily have any straight testimony to offer on this. We did work with the racetracks, the horsemen, and the Racing Commission staff here on this bill, and I'm here more to answer any kind of technical questions. There's a lot of background work into this, and I'd be happy to address any kind of questions that you might have on it. We are in favor of what is before you today, and kind of just stand by for any kind of questions. And I also believe our staff attorney, Joe Newton's online also to answer any kind of questions on that. So we're here more as support for this bill and to answer any kind of technical questions that you might have.
Well, very good. Thank you. Hang on, and we'll see what questions arise. And we can move to other testifiers at this point. I have Mr. Offerman, Andrew Offerman from Canterbury Park.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, appreciate your time. It's Andrew Offerman, Vice President of Racing from Canterbury Park. As mentioned, Canterbury Park is supportive of the measures that are in this bill and the flexibility that it gives the Racing Commission, not only as to how to finance some of their regulatory costs, but also as it comes to the 50-day live racing requirement given the current uncertainty due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So Canterbury Park is supportive and would be happy to answer any questions that you or members of the committee may have relative to Canterbury's position in this bill.
Thank you for your testimony, and stand by for questions if they arise. Next up, we have James Goldstein.
Hi, thank you. My name is James Goldenstein. I'm from Shakopee. Just want to thank you for taking the time to listen to my thoughts about this. Representatives Brad Tapke and Tony Albright have introduced HF4597. I want to thank them for all their hard work and what they have done for our local horse racing tracks here. Just to state, I have zero connections with Canterbury Park or Running Aces. I do not work for them or own horses. I'm just a horse racing fan. I'm all in favor of what is being brought forward here today to help Canterbury Park and Running Aces keep running during this time. It is my understanding that the portion regarding ADW has been removed from this. I urge everybody to consider adding this back in. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up on the list, we have Court Holton.
Hi there. My name is Court Holton. I represent the HBPA, which is the Thoroughbred Horse Racing Organization in Minnesota. And this bill really sort of originated with us. We devised a way of having our race fans stay home and stay safe and still participate in their favorite sport. Unlike professional football, basketball, or baseball, the live fan is everything to us in terms of source of revenue. I mean, the Vikings and the Twins, they get ticket revenue, but their real revenue is derived from television and television advertising. All of our revenue is derived from the activities that live fans contribute when they're at the venue. That portion is not in the bill, which is unfortunate. We still, our ask of this committee remains, please pass this bill on to the next committee. I don't want any misunderstanding about that. And I guess for a variety of reasons, I'm not going to comment further. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, Peter May Jr. Welcome to the committee. Is Peter May Jr. on the line?
Right now, Madam Chair, I don't see him. I reached out to him again via email to see if he is planning to join us, but right now he is not on the call.
Thank you, Travis. Well, the next on our list is Michael Tyndall. Is he on the line?
Hi, everybody. I'm Michael Tyndall. I live in Invergrove Heights, and I am also a horse racing fan here in the state. I guess my only concerns with this bill are with the advanced deposit wagering. It was such an obvious, simple solution to help everyone social distance, and I'd really like to see it back in there. Horse players around the country and Minnesota have already been playing tracks at like Oaklawn Park in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida. They're already wagering on those, and it works with 32 other states. Don't quite get why it won't work here, but I'd just like to say that I think it would be wise for us to do this at this point. Thank you for letting me speak today.
Thank you for your testimony. And if Mr. May has not joined us, Travis, we can move to member discussion.
It's not here at this time yet. So if there's members would like to talk, let's start with that.
Very good. I will start a list. I see Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a quick question to the bill author. So as I understand it, there will be races at Canterbury Park, and there won't be fans there watching. And without even a temporary instituting of ADW, they want to actually be able to bet on those races at Canterbury, but they can vote on the races at Hot Springs or Gulfstream or other things. And this is going to be a hard question, but I think it makes some sense to do that. And I'm wondering where the opposition is, and is there the possibility of reaching some type of agreement prior to this bill's next hearing within state government finance?
Representative Tabke.
Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, not Mr. Chair, sorry. Madam Chair and Representative Dean. So yes, this is obviously a question that we knew was coming. And so there were a lot of different folks that have been working on getting this bill put together in a short amount of time after we recognized that the stay-at-home orders were going to be extended and the racing season was going to be significantly impacted. We started working on how to get this done and working with all of our partners throughout the racing industry and from the Thoroughbred Association, like Court represents the harness racing to Running Aces, as well as the tribal nations as well, who have a big stake in how our gambling and how this type of thing works in Minnesota. And so there was a lot of really good support for getting this done, and people wanted to get it done. It was a bridge too far as an expansion of gambling for the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association that they could not cross, as well as many in the Minnesota State Senate were unable to get to that direction as well. So I don't think that there's a possibility of getting to that agreement during this session if we weren't able to get to it already.
Quick follow-up, Madam Chair.
Representative Dean.
So as I understand it, because of the stay at home and because of social distancing and all of that, I know that both Running Aces and Canterbury have a significant amount of revenue that's generated within their card rooms. So I'm assuming that their card rooms are closed right now as well. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what the future looks like. I mean, Yogi Berra said it best, predictions are hard to make, especially when they're about the future. But I mean, this could put both of these tracks in a really, really difficult place relative to being able to continue to operate following this year. And I would just encourage a lot of those individuals and groups that are concerned about the expansion with ADW, and I certainly understand their concerns, that an exception for a short period of time might allow these tracks to continue to operate into the future beyond just the season. So I guess that's more of a comment than a question.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I'm assuming that no opponents of this bill have signed up to testify. Is that correct?
Representative Garofalo, everybody who signed up to testify has testified, other than the one person who didn't come to the meeting.
Okay, so then I'll ask Representative Tapke. I guess our colleague Representative Dean was much more diplomatic than I'll be, and that is that I don't understand the opposition to the off-track wagering, the advanced deposit wagering. I know and obviously there's a track record here of this issue. You know, going back to 10 years ago, gambling used to be and gaming used to be a very divisive issue. There were a lot of contention, conflict, and issues. And as a result of the partnership between the Mohawketon Sioux and Canterbury Park, we've had a really good cooperative arrangement. And obviously, this bill wouldn't be moving forward. This bill would not have been introduced or been in committee if Canterbury hadn't been in communication with stakeholders and support. And so no one's interested in reopening the conflicts of the past. No one's interested in seeing the bad things that happened in the past in terms of it becoming a divisive issue. No one's interested in seeing that happen again. But what we are interested in doing is making sure that positive collaborations work well. Oh, hold on. No, I'm not called. Give me one. Sorry. No, I'm on a call right now. So don't interrupt. So, go away. Sorry. So the my question for you, Representative Tappy, is: can you tell me, in your own words, can you state for me what the why the opponents are opposed to this? What is their stated opposition to this?
Representative Tabkey.
Thank you, Chair Halverson and Representative Garofalo and company. I'm not going to pretend to try to speak for opponents because there were quite a few. And this is something, as we all know, that we're in a COVID-centric environment right now at the legislature. And so we can't do anything. If this were normal times and this were something that we were trying to get done, which I haven't ever tried to get done myself, of an expansion of gambling through ADW, if this weren't during COVID that we were trying to do something like that, we would have had more latitude to work and have more time to get things done. But that's simply not the environment that we're in today. And today we had to get to something that definitely makes good changes that will very much help to, as Representative Dean was talking, that the horse racing industry is going to be significantly impacted by COVID-19. The racetracks are going to be significantly impacted by COVID-19. And we were able to find places where we do agree. And so moving forward with the places where we do agree instead of not doing the whole bill was absolutely the way to go with this. So that's why we made the changes, and that's why we were able to bring forward what we have today, which will do really good things for the tracks and the horse racing industry in Minnesota.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Tapke. So I understand they're not your views, but I mean, I can't think of a single reason. I mean, it's not even an expansion of gambling. It's not. So, I mean, obviously there's some organized opposition to this. What is their talking point? Besides saying it's an expansion of gambling when it's not, what is their opposition to this bill?
And Representative Garofalo, Representative Tabke, I just want to caution before we start putting words in people's mouths that, you know, it's hard for Representative Tabke, I would say, to testify to somebody's thoughts or feelings. I know that Representative Tabke worked in the space of a few short days with, I mean, this first came to my attention just a few days ago. And he had been working with all of the stakeholders. And you asked about opposition to the bill in front of us. What is in front of us, actually, from my understanding, has been worked out across the board with stakeholders. And it was what could get done very, very quickly. So I just want to be put out that caution that I don't want our members being responsible to speak for others. But I will allow Representative Tabke to offer his point of view. Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much for that, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. And again, I will just reiterate the fact that there are many participants and players who we were working together with to get this done, who I'm really proud we were able to get to solutions in this. The parts that we weren't able to agree on, we weren't able to agree on because they, unlike I and unlike you, Representative Garofalo, believe that it is an expansion of gambling, and there's nothing that I can do about that, no matter how hard we tried, and we tried really hard to understand that this would, even if it is an expansion of gambling, from their perspective, it would be just for one year. And so we worked together to get these things done, and I'm, again, really happy with the things that we were able to agree on a very short, difficult time.
And Madam Chair?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that we should never be putting words in other people's mouths. And certainly there are limitations when we have, when we're having remote committee hearings. But I have to tell you that I found out about the removal of the advanced deposit wagering when I read the paper. My understanding was that there was stakeholder agreement on this when the bill was moving forward. And I mean, given the contract that exists between the collaborative relationship that exists between Canterbury Park and the Milwaukee and Sioux, the bill never would have been introduced if there wasn't cooperation. Because for anyone who's not familiar with it, the expansion of gambling that violates the contract between those two results in exceptionally large financial penalties for Canterbury Park. So without putting words in people's mouth, is there anyone who can tell me who is against this bill? I mean, if there are individual senators, name their names. If there's outside groups, I want to know who they are. I thought there was agreement on this bill before this morning. So either Madam Chair, Representative Tabke, can you answer that?
Representative Tabke, you have answered the question a couple of times. I think it's a little bit challenging to say what's the opposition to this bill when nobody has testified in opposition to it. Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess, Representative Garofalo, I understand what you're trying to get at here, and I'm not going to where we're at, and I've already stated that the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, MIGA, was opposed to this bill because they believe it's an expansion of gambling. And with that, we were able to find agreement on some things. And so that is not any longer part of this bill. And so the bill was posted last Tuesday because we, for time frame wise, we had to get what we thought we could get done and what we wanted to get done into the bill. And we posted that bill early last week. And then by, I think it was Thursday, we had the amendment that you see before you today was posted last Thursday. There have been one small change to that since last Thursday, but all this was posted last week. So it's not like it was sprung at the very last second by any stretch.
So Madam Chair and Representative Tabke, again, I respect the fact of the limitations we have here. I'll take it face value that you said that MIGA, the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, is against the bill as was originally drafted. I'll take that at face value. But in light of the fact that Canterbury Park and the Milwaukee and Sioux have a very solid contract, I guess I don't believe that MIGA was opposed to this bill when you introduced it. I don't believe you would introduce that bill, and I don't believe Canterbury Park would support that bill if there wasn't an agreement between stakeholders. And I just am and if someone wants to contact me offline and tell me what the heck's going on, I'd appreciate it. But I still don't understand the opposition to this bill, opposition to the bill as it was originally intended. We have no testifiers in committee. We have ghosts telling us that they're against this bill. There's been no public statements outlining what the substance of it is behind some goofy senators saying that this is an expansion of gambling, when it's clearly not. So I support the bill, Madam Chair, and Representative Tabke and Representative Albright, I want to thank you for your efforts on this. But, you know, we can't afford to be stupid. And 25% unemployment rate in our state, we can't afford to be dumb. And the opposition to the advanced deposit wagering is stupid. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I'm not seeing any other hands raised at this time. I will give everybody a minute to make sure that I haven't missed recognizing somebody. I'm not seeing anybody take me up on that. So Representative Tabke, what are your final words on the bill?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I appreciate everyone's support for what has been a lot of great people getting a lot of good work done, and this will absolutely help the horse racing industry in Minnesota as well as the racetracks. And so I appreciate everyone's support on this bill and renew my motion to re-refer House File 4597 as amended to State Gov Finance.
Representative Tabke renews his motion that House File 4597.
Yeah, second time.
My apologies, friends. I will state that again. Representative Tabke renews his motion that House File 4597 will be re-referred to State Government Finance as amended. We will ask our CLA to take the roll, please.
Sure.
Keep your back.
One of my friends can talk to me. Who? Mason.
All right, Chair Halverson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Stevenson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Davids.
Aye.
Representative Dean.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Haley.
Yes.
Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Representative Creshaw.
Aye.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lislegard. Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative O'Neill.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Tabke.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
There being 18 votes in favor, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to state government finance. Thank you, Representative Tabke. We can remute everybody. Oops, except I accidentally muted myself. I'm very quick with my mute button because there's always a lot of activity in my house, so I apologize. I just muted myself unnecessarily. Next bill on our agenda is Representative Fisher. Representative Fisher, are you on the call?
Yes, I am, Representative Chair Helverson.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the committee. I'm going to move that House File 3625 be re-referred to the General Register, and I will call upon Representative Fisher to explain his bill.
Thank you, Chair Helverson and committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 3625. This, while maybe a three-page bill, there's only two very simple changes that are being made. These are to address some of the issues around affordable housing. One of the first items that is being addressed in the bill is addressing the issue of modular homes and manufactured home parks. It would be to allow the utilization of a two-family modular home on a larger lot. And this is more commonly thought of as a duplex, as one more option to help address the state's shortage of workforce housing and update older manufactured home parks to meet changing demographic. It retains all the existing provisions from a 2019 bill that stakeholders had agreed to for local control and approvals, and there has been no opposition to this part of the bill. The bill also makes one other small change, and this is toward the end of the bill on lines 3.9 and once again on 3.20. And what it does is it changes the time for collecting a $15 annual fee. It was set at 90 days, and the bill is changing it to 60 days to have 60 days for the manufactured home park to collect a $15 fee from the residents. Once again, there is no opposition to this part of the bill. I also do know that Mr. Bruner from the represent the Manufactured Modular Home Association has also submitted a letter to the committee that is also posted on the website, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. And just a reminder, members, Simon Brown sent out the letter along with the other documents for our meeting today. So if you're looking for that, that's where you can find it in that email. Members, is there any discussion to Representative Fisher's bill? I'm not seeing anybody seek recognition. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 3625 be re-referred to the General Register, and we will take the roll on that motion.
Chair Halverson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Stevenson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Davids.
Aye.
Representative Dean.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Garofalo. Representative Haley. Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Cotiza Watoon. Representative Creshaw.
Aye.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lislegard. Representative Mahoney. Representative O'Neill.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Tabke.
Aye.
And Representative Tice.
Aye.
And to just to repeat a couple names from before, Representative Garofalo.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
Aye.
Representative Mahoney.
I believe Representative Mahoney has stepped off.
Yep.
Thank you, Travis. There being 17 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails, and you're on your way, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Appreciate the opportunity. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Next bill on the agenda for the day is House File 3398 from Representative Morrison. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'll go ahead and move your bill, and then we can deal with the author's amendment as well. Is that all right?
I have a DE amendment.
Yes. So I need to move the bill first. So I'm going to move that House File 3398 be re-referred to the General Register. And as Representative Morrison noted, there is an author's amendment that will get the bill in the shape the author likes. So at this time, Representative Morrison, I can move your DE. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. So I will move the adoption of the DE6 amendment. Is there any discussion to that motion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the adoption of the DE6 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails. And Representative Morrison, the bill is before us in the shape that you would like, and you may proceed with explaining the bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The issue of prior authorization is one that legislators from both parties have been trying to fix for many years, and we owe it a debt of gratitude for their efforts, perhaps especially to Representatives Albright and Hamilton. House File 3398 in the DE6 amendment is a bipartisan bill to address the challenges with prior authorization, and I'd like to thank my co-authors, Hamilton, Albright, O'Neill, Stevenson, Howard, Pryor, Bonner, Brand, Akin, Tadke, Freiberg, Pryor, and Hansen. Now more than ever, we need to make certain that physicians, nurses, pharmacists, and other providers can provide care in a timely, efficient manner. We need to do whatever we can to reduce administrative burdens and ensure that all resources are being devoted to patient care. If you or a family member have ever been through a difficult prior authorization process, or if you are a provider, you understand the frustration and the delay in care that it can create. This bill addresses problems that we've all heard about from constituents related to prior authorization requirements, resulting in delays in needed care for patients. This bill is needed today more than ever to help physicians, nurses, pharmacists, and other healthcare providers to focus on patient care. National estimates show that the cost of prior authorization is $36,000 a year per physician. For Minnesota, that's over $1.3 billion spent on administrative hassles that are not helping patients. These same estimates show that nurses are spending nearly 4 hours a day interacting with health plans on prior authorization requests. This is not a patient-centered use of their time. We cannot afford this time away from patient care. House File 3398 does not eliminate prior authorization. It instead shortens decision-making timelines, provides more transparency as to the criteria used for prior authorization, and ensures that patients can get the treatments they need in a timely manner. House File 3398 passed the Health and Human Services Policy Committee on March 11th with a unanimous vote. Since then, there's been a lot, emphasis on a lot, of work done on this bill by both the proponents and the opponents. This DE6 amendment incorporates many changes that have come from discussions among the stakeholders. There's been movement from the provider community who supports this bill and from the payers and others that initially opposed it. With this amendment, I know of no groups that are actively opposing the bill. So just to go through the compromise amendment, I'll share the major changes from the first engrossment. The amendment clarifies that all of the effective dates are January 1st, 2021, and adds language to only apply to contracts sold, issued, or renewed on or after that date. This was at the request of the health plans to align with their contract years. The amendment deletes the original Section 1. This was a problem for the health plans and has been removed. Sections 2 through 8 are definitions. It updates several definitions related to utilization review and prior authorization. There's no opposition to these definitions, and this amendment does not change these sections. Section 9 is regarding the standard review determination. Current law requires utilization review organizations to make an authorizing decision in 10 days for a standard determination. The original bill proposed 36 hours. The amendment changes the first engrossment from 4 business days to 5 business days, and this is the result of a compromise between providers and the plans. Section 10 is in regard to the expedited review determination. Current law allows up to 72 hours for an expedited review. The first engrossment reduced this to 48 hours. This amendment adds that at least one business day must be included in the 48 hours. This is a compromise that neither side is completely happy with, but it allows more time for the plans to contact a facility over the weekend. Section 11, there are no changes. These are just technical changes related to provider requirements to provide the needed information for the RO to make their determination. Section 12 is regarding the standard appeal. Current law requires a standard appeal to be completed within 30 days, and expedited appeals must be completed in 72 hours. The original bill proposed that all appeals must be completed in 72 hours. The first engrossment required standard appeals to be completed within 15 days. This amendment keeps the 15 days, but increases the time a URO can have if it needs more time, from 72 hours to 4 days. Section 13 is regarding retroactive denials. It just says, subdivision 3 just says that a URO cannot retroactively revoke or change a prior authorization they have approved unless for reasons of fraud or misinformation. And this amendment does not change this section. Section 14 is regarding review by physician with same or similar specialty. This requires the person denying a prior authorization to not only be a licensed physician in Minnesota, which is current law, but that the physician have the same or similar specialty as the provider that typically treats the condition. The amendment adds a new paragraph D that exempts PBMs from this requirement to allow decisions to be made by a licensed physician or a pharmacist. And this was part of our negotiation with the PBM Association. Section 15 is regarding prior authorization criteria posted on a website. This amendment does not change this section. It just requires UROs to submit evidence-based clinical criteria used to make prior authorization determinations to the health plans, and the health plan must post them on its public website. Section 16 is regarding 45-day notice of all new prior authorization requirements. This is not a change from the first engrossment, but requires the URO to provide advance notice of any changes to prior authorization requirements and that they be posted on the public website. It also requires the URO to provide written notice to all in-network providers at least 45 days prior to the change. Section 17 is regarding continuity of care. Subdivision 1 applies to a patient that has an approved prior authorization and changes health plans. The bill requires the new plan to cover the service for at least 60 days to allow the patient the time to meet with their practitioner and determine next steps. Subdivision 2 says that if health plan changes the coverage terms or the clinical criteria for prior authorizations during the enrollee's contract year, the plan must continue to cover the drug or procedure for which they approved the prior authorization. This amendment does not change this section. Getting there. Section 18 is regarding annual posting of prior authorization data. Health plans are required to post on their public websites the annual number of prior authorizations that were authorized and the number that were denied. The amendment includes additional reporting language related to the use of electronic prior authorization and the reason services are denied. This was added at the request of the health plans. Section 19 is about MDH report. The amendment creates a new study to be done by the Department of Health related to the number and reasons for prior authorization denials. This has been agreed to, and the Department of Health thinks that this can be done without a fiscal cost, as they already have this information. It would just be a matter of compiling it. So that is the gist of the prior authorization changes, and I stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Morrison, for your explanation of your amended bill. I've got a couple people on the list. I see that Mr. Renner, David Renner from the Minnesota Medical Association is available for questions, but won't be testifying. Is that correct? And
correct.
Dan Andreessen from the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. If you'd like to introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony, you may.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Again, my name is Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, the trade association representing Minnesota's 7 nonprofit health plans. We appreciate all the work that's been done on this bill in a short amount of time. The council and its members have been meeting regularly with Representative Morrison, Senator Rosen, and proponents since this bill was introduced in mid-February to find a workable compromise that maintains an appropriate prior authorization system while improving the process. As health plans, our primary focus is to improve the process for the patients and the enrollees we cover. We're grateful for the recent changes made for expedited reviews and the inclusion of the study language so we can learn more about how we can improve the prior authorization process in the future. We still have a change that we see as necessary to accomplish the goals of improving this process. This is regarding the turnaround time for standard reviews, and we've offered the idea of a phased-in approach to Representative Morrison as a way to help make this work. We commend Representative Morrison for all of her work to bring all the parties together and forge a bill that's workable, and we pledge to continue to work in good faith with Representative Morrison and proponents as this bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I don't have any other members of the public who have signed up to testify on the bill, so we can move to member discussion. Representative Haley.
There we go. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Morrison, for your work on this and all of your peers in the House and Senate and the advocates. I am in support of your bill, so my comments are not, don't interpret them as derogatory or against, but just some things that I want to point out if there's opportunity as you continue to refine this. There's three things. First of all, just the time to for prior authorization. I still understand that many providers submit via fax, and I know you changed that. I think looking at my notes here in your DE6, you called that out, but I guess my opinion is if they're still going to submit via fax, then these shortened prior auth rules shouldn't apply. We've got to get to an electronic system because that's an administrative cost in itself. And, you know, you call out that one of the reasons we're doing this is to save administrative fees. My second comment is you have a number of areas in the bill that require the plans to post things on their websites and to submit studies back. I would love to see a study on the impact of healthcare costs. I certainly am all in favor of everything we can do to promote transparency for patients and to, you know, improve their care and the timeliness of their care. But I'm also, and for those of you who have worked with me, you know, I am very, very concerned about rising healthcare costs, particularly in my district and my region of the state. Our healthcare costs are 40% higher than other areas of the state. And so it's a balancing act. Of course, prior authorization was instituted years ago as a way to help manage the rapidly increasing healthcare costs. So it's something I just want to point out. And I would, I wish there would be a report included back to the legislature on the impact of that, again, advocating for my region. My third comment, in your opening statements, Representative Morrison, you said, you know, two chief reasons for the bill, transparency for patients and not delaying care. And I support that objective. I just find it curious when we talk about delaying care when right now we are in a situation in the state when folks are still having care delayed. because of executive order. And I wish that we could do more to open up our fantastic healthcare system and make it available to all patients for regular care. So thank you very much for your work. And again, I will be a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Representative O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, I did have questions. Representative Morrison covered those in her presentation, so I do not need to ask any questions at this time.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Chair Haley. Representative Morrison, I just want to thank you for bringing forward this bill. I think it takes an important step forward. One area that I just wanted to highlight, because prior auths can lead to delays, and I know that part of what you're doing is really seeking to address those barriers, but just to highlight the fact that prior auths oftentimes interact with wait lists for services as well, in really difficult ways for consumers. And from a mental health perspective, with where we are right now with COVID and where we were prior to COVID, there are oftentimes long wait lists for access to diagnostic assessments or to residential treatment beds as well. And I've heard the really heartbreaking stories of families having to go through multiple prior auth situations just because the timing of the wait list versus the timing of the prior auth as well. And so I really see this as a really important step forward and hope that work can continue to ensure that we are ensuring access to healthcare services as quickly as possible. So thank you for your work on this.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Would just like to say thank you to Representative Morrison for her work on this bill as well. This has been a very arduous discussion. I hope my dogs don't start barking. and it takes a lot to get all the stakeholders in the room. I want to thank the providers and the plans and the other stakeholders who have come together to put a lot of thought and effort into this. This is how good public policy gets made. And Representative Haley raised a really good point that this was a tool that was put in the toolbox to try to address the rising cost of healthcare. And that was many, many years ago. And I think that it's very important for all of us to think, and this is my charge back to the stakeholders and others, if this is not the right tool in the toolbox to help control rising healthcare costs, what are the right tools? And how do we find ways to address the way that costs continue to explode across the board? So that is my large charge. I always am thinking about addressing the cost of healthcare, and that's a huge response. With regard to Representative Haley's concern about elective surgeries and procedures, I think it's important to note that nothing that is necessary is being denied, but the governor has put the plan in motion to reopen elective surgeries on May 11th. So that is forthcoming rather quickly. So I want to thank everybody. Not seeing anybody else raising their hand for recognition at this time. Representative Morrison can give a final word on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill is the result of years of work and compromise and is long overdue. I urge your support to streamline the prior authorization process to reduce delays in care, administrative expenses, and provider frustration. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. So I will renew my motion that House File 3398 be re-referred to the General Register, and the clerk can take the roll on that motion.
Chair Halverson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Stevenson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Davids.
Aye.
Representative Dean.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Haley.
Yes.
Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Representative Creshaw.
Aye.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lislegard. Representative Mahoney. Representative O'Neill.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Tabke.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
There being 17 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails. And Representative Morrison, you're on your way to the general register. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Next up on the agenda, we have House File 3904 from Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. good afternoon, everyone. It's nice to see the faces of those who are on video and catch up a little bit here. Regarding House File 3904, I do have an A1 author's amendment.
We have to get your bill moved first. Awesome. So if you could move your bill to get it in front of us.
Absolutely. I would move 3904 to be before the committee.
So Representative Katiza Watun moves House File 3904 be re-referred to the general register, and you have an author's amendment, and you may move that if you would like to adopt that.
Thank you. I would move the A1 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape I would like after additional consultation with the department and advocates.
Very good. Representative Katiza Watun moves the adoption of the A1 author's amendment. Is there any discussion to that motion? Seeing no discussion, we can take a voice vote on that motion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails, and the bill is before us in the shape that you would like, and you may proceed with your explanation of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, members, House File 3904 is a bill that will update our money transmission statutes in Minnesota. As technology continues to change, so have the ways that consumers and merchants transmit their funds. While we did introduce this bill prior to today's current pandemic circumstances, it only continues to highlight the ease of access and importance of e-commerce, especially among small online businesses. Companies like PayPal, MoneyGram, and Western Union, just to name a few, have delivery of funds requirements in Minnesota. Currently, they are required to deliver funds within 5 days. This bill does not waive that requirement, but instead it would revise that requirement in certain circumstances with a goal to enhance consumer protection. We have worked with the Department of Commerce on the bill, and the current version, as amended, is a product of that collaboration. Just this morning, the Senate unanimously passed the bill off the floor. I'd also like to thank my co-author, Representative Swazinski. Everyone should have a letter of support from Legal Aid and the Electronic Transactions Association in your electronic committee folders. With that, I would like to turn it over to a testifier, Andy McAmeel from PayPal. He will speak briefly to the bill and then be available for any member questions.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Watun. Mr. Mac, let's see. McAmeel, see if I got that right, from PayPal. Welcome to the committee. You can introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon, Chairman, Chairwoman Halverson and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3904 as amended. I'm in-house counsel for PayPal. I've been with PayPal for 13 years, and one of the areas of my responsibility is the state money transmitter licensure that PayPal holds in all 50 states and a handful of territories. By way of background, as many of you probably already know, PayPal is a leading electronic payment platform empowering over 300 million consumers and merchants and more than 200 markets to thrive, to help thrive the global economy. PayPal offers products that enable users to make and receive both personal and commercial payments in a safe and secure manner. PayPal is regulated at the state and federal level in the United States, including in Minnesota, as a licensed money transmitter. I mean, talk about House File 3904 is amended and why the bill is important to protect Minnesota consumers when they transfer funds to another person or make a purchase from a merchant. The overall goal of the legislation is to better protect Minnesota consumers by ensuring fraudulent activity is monitored and prevented and goods and services are received as intended. This is particularly important now as we transition to a predominantly online economy due to the current global health crisis. The current Minnesota Money Transmitter Act requires licensed money transmitters like PayPal, Western Union, MoneyGram, and others to transfer funds to the intended recipients within 5 days of when that money transmitter received the funds with no exceptions. In most cases, PayPal will do just that. In fact, PayPal is in the business of transmitting money quickly and safely. But there are certain instances when we need to and other licensees need to hold the funds for longer than 5 days in order to help protect consumers. It is important to note that most other state money transmitter laws do not have this 5-day delivery of funds requirements. House 3904, as amended, is modeled on statutes from both Washington State and California, thereby creating consistency and harmonization in state money transmitter laws. Both California and Washington have delivery of funds requirements, but it's not an absolute. They have some common sense, reasonable exceptions that allow the licensee instances to hold the funds longer than the delivery of funds requirement when it's needed. In this case, what we're adding in the current Minnesota law does not allow funds to be held longer for reasons such as fraud prevention, transaction monitoring to assist a law enforcement investigation, or when a consumer has a problem with goods or services rendered. So for example, if PayPal or another licensed money transmitter receives money for transmission, but we have good reason to believe that fraud is occurring or there's some other illegal activity, there's no exemption currently in the Minnesota 5-day delivery of funds requirement that would allow us to hold those funds longer. We would have an absolute requirement to transmit the money, even though we think that there's some sort of criminal or fraudulent activity. House File 3094, as amended, updates Minnesota's money transmitter statute to allow for licensed money transmitters like PayPal to hold funds longer than 5 days under very specific circumstances. As a licensed money transmitter, we are required to have an AML anti-money laundering program and transaction monitoring in place. And then in order to conduct that monitoring, investigate activities, occasionally holding funds longer than 5 days is necessary. House File 3904 as amended would allow for funds to be held when fraud has occurred or is thought to be occurring, allowing for more thorough fraud prevention and monitoring on the front end before the funds are actually transferred and delivered. The proposed changes would allow for holding funds in instances when goods or services are purchased, thereby ensuring Minnesota consumers receive what they paid for and in the condition they were promised. If a consumer doesn't get what they purchased, then the ability to hold the funds beyond 5 days helps ensure that there are funds available there to pay the consumer. The bill also allows a customer to instruct a licensee to hold the funds longer than 5 days, which requires the licensee to have a statutory exemption that allows this. In addition, the bill provides transparency for customers that wish to learn why funds have been held. The bill would require money transmitters to respond to customer requests if a transaction was placed on hold. So if a sender of funds has those funds or recipient of funds, those funds are placed on hold, they can request to us, why did you place that hold? What's going on with that transaction? And the bill, as amended and what we're putting out there, requires us to respond and tell them why. I think that transparency is significant and important. Finally, the bill includes provisions for information that must be disclosed to merchants in their agreement with money transmitters. So we want to make sure that we have a contractual right to hold these funds longer. And we think that that's important throughout the industry as well. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3904. I think it's some common sense amendments that allow us to protect our consumers in Minnesota. Happy to answer any questions that you or others may have.
Thank you for your testimony. And I just wanted to note for members on the call, we also have Megan Verdeja from the Department of Commerce, who will be available to answer questions if anyone needs them. I also see another testifier from PayPal, Megan Howell. Is that correct? Is Ms. Howell going to testify as well?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Collaborated and decided I would just do that.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony then, Mr. McEmmel. I got your name wrong. Did you state your name, by the way? Because I don't think you corrected me, so do that.
McEmmel. I wasn't about to correct
you. McEmmel. Thank you. Thank you. My apologies for that.
Thank you.
Members, we can now take any member discussion to this bill. My dogs are going to go crazy. UPS just went by. Okay, seeing no hands, Representative Katiza Watoon can have the final word on the bill.
Sorry, Madam Chair, my internet cut out for just a moment. Oh. Can you repeat that?
I said you can have the final word.
Wonderful. Members, this is a good bill. I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. Representative Katiza Watoon renews her motion that House File 3904 be referred to the General Register as amended. And the clerk can take the roll on that motion.
Chair Halverson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Stevenson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Davids.
Aye.
Representative Dean.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Haley.
Yes.
Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Representative Crenshaw.
Aye.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lislegard. Representative Mahoney. Representative O'Neill.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Tabke.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
There being 17 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Katiza Watoon. The final bill on our agenda today is House File 4067, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move that we advance House File 4067 to the General Register as well.
Representative Elkin moves that House File 4067 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Elkins, I understand that Representative Vogel is going to present your bill with you. So,
yes.
Representative Vogel, Representative Elkins, you may proceed.
Yep, I'm just going to let Bob do the presentation. This is a community banking bill, and since Representative Vogel is our community banking expert, he's going to present it.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Vogel. You may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. It's the first time I've done this in front of the committee this way. I think I've been there a few other times, so I have brought my treats in the past. Rather simple bill. There's a letter in your packet, and I'm not going to go through and read the whole thing because the hour is late, and you've already had enough discussion on different things, I'm sure. But basically, United Bankers Bank was set up to serve community banks throughout Minnesota back in the mid-1970s. And over the years, the community banking scene has changed, and it now serves more than just banks in Minnesota. In fact, it had a merger with an Ohio bank a few years ago. Part of the statute when it was put in effect was back in 1975 that 51% of the stock had to be banks, which was good then and was really a protection against this novel idea of having a banker's bank. Since then, the landscape has changed in the last few years. Banker's banks have been merging, and it could become now an impediment to the United Bankers Bank, which is Minnesota's banker bank, staying here because as these mergers occur, if indeed they ever got to a point where more than 51% of the stock could be held by outside banks because of mergers with different states, it would preclude the bank from being here. And since all other bankers' banks don't have that restriction, has the potential then to have them moving to other states. So it's a simple striking of a few, of one sentence at the end saying that 51% of the stock has to be held by Minnesota banks. There is no opposition from either the independent bankers or the Minnesota bankers. And as I understand it, Commerce is neutral on it. So thank you. Oh, by the way, Madam Chair, Dwight Larson is here from United Bankers Bank if there's a question to ask of him.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Is the intent just to have Mr. Larson available for questions, or did he want to testify to the bill?
Just available for questions at this point, unless, we talked about it, and I told him I would explain and have him available, though, if people do have questions.
Very good. And Representative Elkins, I understand that you worked with stakeholders to get agreement on the bill and the bill language. Can you confirm that as well?
Yes, I reached out to both the Bankers Association and the credit unions, and both organizations are in favor of this bill.
Thank you for that clarification. With no further testimony on the bill, we can move to member discussion. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this bipartisan bill day in Commerce? Because every one of these has had either a member or another GOP person on there, which I think is great. And it's good to see these kinds of things happening under the adverse conditions that we have. So that is an observation, is not member testimony, but observation.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. It's nice to see, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Other member questions or comments? Or observations? Seeing none, Representative Elkins, you can have the final word on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Vogel and I go back way back. We served on the board of directors of the 35W Solutions Alliance for a number of years when I was a Bloomington City Council member and he was a Scott County Commissioner. So we're old friends. So I'm happy to be doing this with him. And he's going to be retiring this year. So this may be his last time testifying for a committee. So I want to send him out on a high note here. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to repeat my motion that we advance House File 4067 to the General Register.
Representative Elkins renews his motion that House File 4067 be re-referred to the General Register, and the clerk can take the roll on that motion.
Chair Halverson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Stevenson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Davids?
Aye.
Representative Dean?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Haley?
Yes.
Representative Howard?
Yes.
Representative Cotizo-Attune?
Aye.
Representative Crenshaw?
Aye.
Representative Lesh?
Aye.
Representative Lislegard? Representative Mahoney. Representative O'Neill.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Tabke.
Aye.
And Representative Tice.
Aye.
There being 17 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you to Representative Elkins and thank you to Representative Vogel. If this is your last bill testimony, we are honored that it was in our committee. So congrats on your retirement. Members, speaking of last, this may be the last Commerce Committee hearing of the year. And so I wanted to allow us some time to have some wrap up and final discussion. What I'm going to propose is that I am going to make a few comments and then we can adjourn and everybody, and then we can have a conversation offline just to give the House Info staff a break. They're recording and monitoring meetings pretty constantly, so if we can adjourn and move forward with offline conversations, I think that would be best. Representative O'Driscoll or anybody else, are you guys okay with that?
That's perfectly fine with me, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Before we do adjourn, I do want to say some public thanks on the record to our wonderful staff. I think all of us are especially grateful right now as staff are making all these meetings possible in very unusual and circumstances. And so want to thank our nonpartisan House staff to start, Ben Johnson, Bob Aleph, Pat McCormick, Chris Kleeman, Randy Chung, Lori Pompu, who have provided assistance to all of us throughout the year, throughout the session. Republican researcher Chelsea Olson, thank you for always bringing such joy to our committee and being a great partner to work with as we plan things that are tend to be unpredictable. Our DFL researcher, Eric Anderson, thank you for the information that you've been providing to the committee. And our committee legislative assistant, Simon Brown, who jumped in mid-session. We appreciate having you part of our work. And to our committee legislative assistants, Lauren Tockenholtze, who is at home with her new baby, yay, our very own commerce baby. And thank you to Travis Reese, who picked up in the middle of what is a very busy session and turned into a very unusual session and served us all with great accomplishments. So we thank you very, very much. Anything you want to say on the record, Representative O'Driscoll, before we adjourn and have our offline conversation?
Well, I want to just underscore absolutely everything that you said as far as the thank yous. Commerce is a very important committee that, as I said 2 years ago when we convened and you became the chair of the committee, that a lot of people expect predictability from and stability from the Commerce Committee. A lot of Minnesota businesses have activity that goes through here, and we need to have folks who are going to take it seriously. And I want to thank you, Madam Chair. You've done a great job, I think. Even in these times of COVID-19, I don't know what we did in the other 18 COVIDs, but I know we did in COVID-19 here with this. So I want to thank you, and I also want to wish you well in your new endeavors as well. This may not be the last Commerce Committee meeting. We may have a special session, and that may involve some Commerce Committee meetings. So don't put your materials away just yet, folks.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for your kind words and your wise warning that we might all be together again sooner rather than later. With that, members, we are adjourned.